ओम शांति। टुडे इज अबाउट योगा एंड कंसंट्रेशन एंड आई एम गोइंग टू गिव यू सम ऑफ द हिंदी वर्ड्स दैट बाबा यूजेस बिकॉज व्हेन वी चर्न विथ दोज वर्ड्स वी गिव आवरसेल्व्स अ वाइडर areas of meaning to think about. The word yoga is of course a Sanskrit word and it's not pronounced yoga it's pronounced yog and it means the connection. Now, we are not objects, and Baba is also not an object. And because of that reason, techniques are not possible to use. You are a someone. Baba is a someone. You are not a something. Baba is not a something. Baba is not an energy. Neither are you. Our bodies are things. Is it right? Is your body a thing or a being? It's a thing. Especially when the soul leaves it, there's no question about it. It's called a corpse. But once the soul is together with the body, then the one that you're relating to is actually the being, the invisible one, who is able to be discerned through the body. And we can also discern independently of the body. Our mind uses the five senses, but when our mind is not using the five senses and we are perceiving something directly with the mind, sometimes people call that the sixth sense. But our mind has the capacity to perceive directly. I see. For example, when you are perceiving vibrations and atmospheres, you can't hear an atmosphere or see an atmosphere, though you sometimes say you can cut it with a knife. You can't actually cut it with a knife, but it's an analogy for something that you can discern directly with your mind. And because the mind itself is intangible, and the things that the mind perceives independently of the senses are also intangible, so we use analogies to refer to those things. Now, yoga, what we do, which is called Raj Yoga, that means it is that yoga, that connection, which enables I, the self, to be a master. You see. So it's about becoming a master of the self. It's about becoming a master of anything which is physical, including the physical body, and anything that we can perceive through the physical senses, which might have an impact on the soul through the mind, you see, because the mind is the part of the soul that gets impacted. Now, this is sometimes called Gyan Yoga. So Gyan, as you know, means knowledge. And we have four subjects which come in a particular order, and we say Gyan first, a second one is Yoga, third one is Dharana, and the fourth one is Service. So then Dharana is usually translated as inculcation. And it also has many other meanings. And it's also connected with the word dharma. And dharma is a word that's generally translated as religion, but it has a much wider meaning than when we use the English word religion. So dharma has to do with the implications in terms of how you act on the basis of who you are. That is dharma and dharma. So yoga is, first of all, I am in contact with myself. That is to say, the energy of the mind, energy is projected out, right? So the energy of the mind is normally projected out into the world through the sense organs. And so we call ourselves externalized people. But in yoga, the energy of the mind is looped back on itself. So that means the mind has this tendency to disperse itself outwards or radiate itself, but you're taking that energy and looping it back on itself so that the mind is directed towards its own self. That means I, the self, using my mind, can feel my own mind, which is an attribute of myself. You see? So the mind is not really a thing. When the soul is thinking and feeling and sensing, then we say that is the mind. But otherwise, there's nothing like the mind. But because it seems to be something, we act as if it is something. In fact, according to the knowledge, the mind is simply, when I, the soul, am thinking, then that is a faculty of the soul, an ability of the soul. So your abilities are not things, they're abilities. So the mind is actually not a thing, but an ability. But still, in English and Hindi, it's a noun. And so the instruction that Baba gives us is, focus your mind on me. That means to say, focus your attention. You hear sometimes in the Muralis this expression, the yoga of the intellect. You remember that expression, yoga of the intellect? And people wonder, what on earth is yoga of the intellect, you see? And what is the intellect anyway? The intellect itself is not a thing, but also an ability. So when I, the soul, am sorting out my thoughts and perceptions, that ability to sort out, that we call the intellect. So the intellect is an ability, the mind is an ability, and the soul is a someone who is able to do different things. And so sometimes the mind, intellect, and sanskaras are called organs of the soul. But they're not separate from the soul. They are ways in which the soul operates. But we're so used to thinking of the mind as a something, the intellect as a something, and the sanskaras as somethings. But they're not actually somethings. They are expressions of the soul. They are activities of the soul. When the soul is thinking, that's, we say, the mind at work. When the soul is evaluating, we say the intellect at work. And when the soul is expressing any individual tendencies, then we say that's the sanskaras operating. So the language that we use is based upon a kind of misunderstanding. And so in our thinking and in our intellectual processes, we have to reset how we think about what. I see. And this is why we talk about it in a number of different ways, so that we can get it. And the yoga of the intellect, it seems to me, equates to focus of attention. So when Baba says, connect the yoga of your intellect with me, the way I see it is, he means, focus your attention on me. And so your attention, you can have an analogy with your eyesight, and I'm assuming everyone here can see. Some of you have glasses, some of you have contact lenses, some of you have good eyesight. But whatever it is, you can see. And you have the ability to focus your eyes on a particular thing. For example, in front of me there is a small bunch of plastic roses. And it is probably visible to all of you, and you can focus your eyes on these roses. And you also have peripheral vision. So it is normal for human beings to focus their eyes on something and to be aware of what is peripherally in your field of vision. And if you are a master of the martial arts, you'd probably be able to see what's behind you, because you develop your sense, which is again a kind of sixth sense, but you are aware of what's behind you. Now, when you're talking about the soul itself and focusing your attention on Baba, that means that the mind, whose tendency is to be caught up in what your sense organs are informing you of, and so we become very easily distracted. So in order for me to hold your attention, I have to be interesting, you see. And if I tell you the same old, you'll say, yeah, yeah, I know that. And then you'll start looking around and thinking about something else. And somebody comes in the door, so you turn to see who comes in the door and where do they go and sit and stuff like that. This is a sign of lack of yoga. So the word yoga also means to be focused, to be concentrated, you see. And so we human souls have choice where we will focus our attention. And wherever we focus our attention, it will either drain our energy or it will give us energy. Now, Baba's recommendation is that we focus our attention on himself. And he says, although you call me a him, I'm not a him. And I'm not a her, and I'm not an it. Because the male and the female and the neutral all refer to objects. And there is no pronoun in English or Hindi or any other language that I'm familiar with that applies to a soul. And the reason for this is that there is no concept of the self as a soul until Baba comes along and says, hey soul, you're a soul. I'm talking to souls, and I'm a soul. I'm the supreme soul, and you're human souls, and you're invisible And you have to learn how to see the invisible. For that, he gives us the third eye. So everybody should be having their third eye open. Is that right? Is your third eye open? So your third eye is the ability to concentrate on something which is invisible and intangible with your mind and to hold it steady in the understanding of what that is. That's the third eye. I see. So when Baba says, I'm giving you the third eye, it means that he's giving us knowledge. And knowledge means not just any old knowledge, but knowledge of the soul and of the Supreme Soul and of the three worlds and of the three aspects of time. That is called knowledge. And then he says to us, you have to process this knowledge so that you understand the implications of it. And as a result of that you are able to focus your attention on God and hold it there. That is yoga. Is that right? So now this is very subtle. And one of the things that he tells us to do also is a sort of a three-step process for yoga. So the first step in yoga is we have to turn our attention within and consider ourselves to be souls. So this is an act that the intellect causes the mind to withdraw the energy from the sense organs and from the external world and to go the opposite direction of where it normally goes. And to be in contact with itself. And then hold steady in that. And now the mind is also a sense organ, not only for sensing material things that you can sense through your physical senses, but the mind can sense the original qualities of the soul. And there are five. One is purity. Now, you don't know what purity feels like, do you? So you have to think, what would purity be? So that means you take a few years to figure out that. Because pure water, as physical, you can think of pure water, it's colorless, odorless, and all that. But purity itself is very difficult to think about because it's absolutely intangible. Usually the first quality that a person discerns when they start to practice meditation and turn the attention within is peace. And this is because the soul itself, when it is detached from the body, it is still. So the word shanti, you know the word om shanti. And om shanti means, shanti means three things in English. So one of them is stillness. One of them is peace. And the third one is silence. So in English, there's a difference between stillness, peace, and silence. So you can think about silence, you can think about peace differently, And you can think about stillness again differently. So the first thing, when you turn your attention within, considering yourself to be a soul, the implication of that act of mind is to detach from the physical body, and in particular from the physical senses. And now we are taught, do this with your eyes and ears and nose, but not mouth, open. Right? We do not have open mouth meditation. Otherwise, we think that person's about to fall asleep. But you can hear, you can see, you can smell, you can feel the atmosphere, temperature, all that. And at the same time, you have oriented your mind towards within and not to the external world. And because of knowing the knowledge, you know that the soul perceives the external world through the sense organs. You cannot perceive the external world without the sense organs. I once met somebody who was blind from birth, and I tried to find out if that person had any capacity whatsoever for visual experiences in the mind, and he did not. Now, we rely enormously on what we see and what we hear, especially these two things. What we see and what we hear influences us enormously. And so the first step of yoga is this idea, which we have to play with in our thinking, of withdrawing our selves from these eyes and these ears, while at the same time they're open. Right, so you can see and you can hear, and then in your mind you position yourself back from your eyes and your ears. So mentally you can imagine yourself as being somewhere in the middle of your head. And then from there you look out through your eyes. That means you can imagine that just as there's a distance between yourself, and if you're looking through the viewfinder of a camera, right? Not a video camera, but the other kind of camera where you actually have a viewfinder, or say you have a single lens reflex camera, you can actually look through the lens of that camera and decide on the photograph that you're going to take. But there's a clear distance between your eyes and the viewfinder and the thing that you're photographing. So in the same way, consider your eyes no different from a camera lens. And then imagine yourself, you have power of imagination for a good reason, so that you can actually consider yourself to be behind your eyes and looking out through your eyes, and really have the sense that your eyes are objects. You see. And has anybody had laser surgery in their eyes? Right. So you know that there's a time when they cut your cornea, and they flip it open and everything goes black. Is that right? Because the light cannot reach your retina. And this is exactly how it is when someone's blind. Their eyes are open and there is blackness. And when you have your eye and all the bits of it are working properly, then your mind receives the visual phenomenon. And according to optics, of course, everything that you can see would be upside down, and then your brain conveniently puts it the right way up. Right? This is physics. And so we have to spend time to understand these things so that we can actually connect ourselves with ourselves and distinguish ourselves from our body and our body parts, or these bodily organs, the eyes in particular and the ears in particular. Now, with our eyes, we have the ability to focus on something, or we can look away, and we can be aware of what's in the periphery, and if there's something that catches our attention, then we'll go and look at that thing with more focused attention. And so the eyes and the mind and the soul all are working together in an absolutely symbiotic way. But for the purposes of meditation, we need to be able to clearly distinguish between who is me, what is me, and what is my body. Because otherwise, I'll not be able to really get it that I am not this body. Because a day will come when I, the soul, have to let go of this body. And so we practice in many different ways to be able to sense that I am not this body. And anything that I can see through my eyes belongs exclusively to the everyday material world. Our eyes cannot see X-rays or ultraviolet or infrared. Our eyes can only see a certain area of the spectrum of light, and whatever that spectrum allows us to see, we call this everyday reality. But it's not total reality, it's just everyday reality for the purposes of everyday life. Now, with meditation, we want to be able to have access to phenomena which are outside the range of our sense perceptions. And so we have to understand what is me, what is the everyday reality, and then we need information about reality which is outside the range of everyday reality. So science has been able to expand the spectrum of everyday reality and show us things through telescopes and microscopes and infrared and ultraviolet and X-rays and various other parts of the visible which are not visible to the naked eye. However, there is a limit beyond which our physical senses, aided or unaided, cannot go. And so the third eye, which is the soul perceiving independently of the sense organs, the soul can perceive first of all itself. You see. So then what Baba says is, you are invisible. You cannot be seen. So, now, how can I see myself if I'm invisible? Because I want to see myself. So he says, well, you can understand yourself, but you can't see yourself. So then, the third eye could also be considered as an organ of understanding. So the soul itself, the part or the faculty that we call the intellect, is that aspect of the soul which has the ability to conceptualize itself. And when we understand something, then we very often say, yeah, I see. I see what you mean. So we use the word to see not only for visual phenomenon, but also when we are able to understand and appreciate a concept. So we cannot see ourselves physically, but people in general are physically minded, body conscious. Yeah? We have a body conscious soul. That means to say the soul is materially minded or materialistic. That is to say, I can only process material concepts. And Baba says, you do not have to be limited to that extent. It is absolutely possible for the soul to go beyond those things. And anyone who finds themselves in Raj Yoga, I think it must be true for all of you, you must have been able to sense things that are non-visible and non-audible, so that your thinking and your intellectual processing knows that this material world is not all there is. And usually people feel this most intensely when they are in front of a corpse, especially if it's somebody close to them, you see. Because you can sense quite clearly that the person is not there, although everything is there, but the person is not there, you see. And when you feel this experience that I can see this is a body, and a little while ago it was a someone, but now it's a something, and something has gone, or we say they have gone, the person has gone. And this very graphically helps us to realize that a person, it really isn't a body. So if that person isn't a body, this person also isn't a body. Me, the self, I'm not a body, you see. Some people, they experience out-of-body experiences. And whenever you experience an out-of-body experience, then it's an experience. You feel it. Some people, they say, they report that they are out of their body and they're above their body, looking down, and they can see their body. And that gives them a very clear sense that if I can see my body, then I am not my body. I am not in the same place as my body. I'm a few inches or feet above it. So what am I? I'm something different. You see? So like that, in many people's lives, there are indicators and experiences which give credibility to this concept that I am not my body. And that helps us to think about it, and it also helps us to position our sense of self outside the body. You see? So you can say to yourself, like in a meditation, you've all done meditation commentaries and things like this, I step outside my body. And you can imagine yourself above your body looking down, or you can be next to it looking sideways. Right? Everybody has that capability because we have an imagination to be able to do that. So our imagination means that the soul has the capacity to form images inside the mind, which help the soul itself to process concepts and ideas and understand what is life. What's it all about? And the main aim of our practice is to be able to have direct contact with God, the Supreme Being. Because that yoga, that's real yoga. Yoga, the connection between I, the soul, and God, the Supreme Being. And Baba also uses this word remembrance. And he says remembrance. Sometimes there are some muralis where he says, don't worry about the idea of yoga, it's much too complicated. Go with remembrance, that's easier. So for example, you're sitting here and you can remember your parents. Whether they're alive or not alive, you can still remember them if you have met them, right? You can see the picture of how they look in your mind because you have memories of them. You can remember places. You can be sitting here in Mount Abu and you can be thinking about your house where you live. And so your mind is able to dart around all over the place, all over the planet and beyond. And you can think into the past and you can also think into the future. So the mind is not limited the way the body is. Your body is here. You can't just shift your body to New York or something in a second, but you can send your mind there. And so the mind is actually quite habituated to darting around all over the place because we have enormous amount of sensory input, all of which goes into the mind and distracts it this way, that way. We have memories, we have concerns, we have desires, we have ambitions, we have all sorts of things going on the inside which pull the mind here, there and everywhere. And then the mind is not so easily able to be concentrated. So for yoga, we have to be able to concentrate the mind. And the mind doesn't like being concentrated because it likes jumping around. And if you say to the mind, okay, you focus on a point of light, and the mind will say, okay, did that now, next. And then you say, no, focus on a point of light for 10 minutes, and the mind will say, why? Why should I do that? I don't want to do that. I've got much more interesting things. Point of light is not interesting. You see? And so this is why Baba gives us so much information. Because what we have to do is we have to engage the mind. And the mind is used to pure thoughts, a few, bad thoughts, some, and then all sorts of distractions, all kinds of waste thoughts, irrelevant thoughts, you know, things just pop into your mind and pop out again, and the mind is scattered, fragmented, and as a result, the things that the mind is capable of doing, it is not available to you for doing those things. So Baba says to us, our mind, our ability to think and feel and sense and all of this, needs to be developed, needs to be focused, needs to be disciplined, needs to be brought to a point where it will do what we want. That means I am not my mind. So again, you have to think deeply. Okay, what we have heard is a soul is a mind, intellect, sanskaras, right? And now we have to say, well, no, a soul has a mind, it has an intellect, it has sanskaras. So then what is a soul? That you have to think about. Say, I am a soul. My capacity to think, or my capacity to get distracted, we still use the possessive noun, mine. So even if the mind is within the soul and an activity of the soul, it's still something that the soul has to bring under its control. So sometimes it is said the mind is like a wild horse. And some of you may know how to break in horses. Anybody knows how to break a horse? No. Anyway, some people do. You have to get that horse to cooperate with you. Otherwise, the horse will immediately jump away and run away, and it has no interest whatsoever in being captured and limited by anything or anyone, because that horse loves its freedom. In the same way, our mind is not very keen to get disciplined. So what is the instrument that we have which brings the mind into a focused state? So that instrument is called the intellect. So the intellect itself cannot connect with God. The intellect is the instrument that gets the mind to focus on God, so that you can experience God through the mind. That means the soul experiences God when the mind is focused on God, and the intellect is the energy that focuses the mind on God. And the sanskaras get in the way. Right? This must be your experience. So, now, in order for us to have focus, in order for us to get our intellect to focus our mind on God, we have to be very, very detached from the physical. Because to make contact with God, we must be on the same level as God. And so now Shiv Baba is non-material. He's a soul. And he tells us, you're a soul, but you're body-conscious souls, and you have to become soul-conscious souls. And so, how do you tell the difference between a body-conscious soul and a soul-conscious soul? Anyway, you're a soul. Okay, so we got that one in. But then, most of the time, most of us are body-conscious souls. So we know we're souls, and we know all about the soul, but we're still body-conscious souls. So what is it that shifts us from being body-conscious souls to soul-conscious souls? And I think that the image of the point is helpful in this. Because the point, according to the knowledge that Baba has given to us, and according to geometry, which is a worldly science, geometry says that a point has no length, no breadth, no width. And the intellect, the body conscious intellect, can work with that idea. But as soon as it does, then you go away from matter. Because anything material has size. Even if it's teeny, teeny, tiny under a microscope, it's still got a size. But if it's a point, it doesn't have any size. So this idea, this concept of the self as a point, is a very extraordinary mechanism to actually shift us mentally, intellectually, from considering reality as material to a non-material reality. Just this idea of a point. Because it has no length, no breadth, no width. And we know from physics that matter, in its essential form, is a point of physical light. Right? And spirit is a point of non-physical light. So the two are very close. They're both points of light, one's physical, one's non-physical. So then we have to think about the distinction between my body, which is a thing, and me, which is a someone. So this something can be reduced to a point of physical light, but me, I am in the form of a point, but I'm conscious. I'm aware that I'm a point. The body cannot be aware that it's a body. You see. So then we shift ourselves over to this idea of awareness. Now, I, the self, am aware of visual phenomena that I can see through my eyes and audible phenomena that I can hear through my ears. So then imagine this tiny point of light, that this is a someone, and it isn't part of the material world. You see, and when you think exactly according to the information that Baba has given us, it has the ability, when we're really focused, to just disconnect us from this bondage to matter. Because the soul is bound to matter and to Maya. So Maya is, as you know, the five vices. Maya is also illusion or delusion. So Maya is the delusion that I am an object. The delusion that I am a body. The delusion that you are a body. The delusion that I can see you. So when you think about it deeply, you realize no one has ever seen me because I'm invisible. And I have never seen anyone. I've just seen their faces. I've seen their masks, you see. So I show my mask, you show your mask. But in the mind, I can imagine myself, the real me, behind my mask. And I can sense the real you behind your mask. And Baba gives us more information. He says each and every soul is fundamentally pure, peaceful, powerful, loving and blissful. So when you see a person, you have to train your eyes to see right through the persona, right through the mask, the character, to this point of light behind it, which is invariably pure, peaceful, blissful, loveful, and powerful. And that is what a person is. And this person performs. A person is an actor. The body is a mask. Your face is the part of your body that is the most expressive. You see. So even with your eyes, you can smile with your eyes, you can be stern with your eyes, you can be arrogant, you can be fearful. All these different expressions of emotions are conveyed through the eyes and the facial expressions, you see. So we tend to automatically and naturally read each other's expressions. And we tend to think that your expression is you. But no, you are behind it, and your expression is your very malleable mask that the soul is able to move in every which way. But the soul is, by definition, an actor. And actions originate where? The actions originate, you could say, in the sanskaras. They come from the inside. And our actions are very often reactions to things that we perceive through our sense organs. So we will react to things we see, things we hear, things we come to know about. But who is acting, who is reacting? It's again this being that is myself, and that I have the option to act or not act when I am independent of my sense organs. So the Maya that Baba wants to free us from by teaching us to meditate is this bondage to our sense impressions. Right? And so, he gives us the knowledge of drama. He says, everything that is going on is an exact repeating play. And it's very, very important to think about this idea of everything being an exact repetition. Because the purpose of that is that it allows us to let it go. If you think this is only happening once, you can't let it go. But once you get the idea that the same thing happens time and time again, you can let it go. Nothing is lost by letting it go. This idea of the continuing repetition of all the scenes in the drama is the only way that you can let go of your sense impressions. And what Baba wants us to do in yoga is to be able to let go. We are in bondage to our bodies, which is called matter, and in particular to our sense perceptions and what we perceive through our sense perceptions. We say it is real. And Baba says, yep, it's real, and it repeats every 5,000 years. So no one can get lost, nothing can get lost, and each thing is more or less equally important. Which means you can let go. And as soon as you let go of the body and the perceptions, then you become your own. And then you can turn the attention to Baba. and then you can take power. And now it's 6:30, so we have to stop and think about all this. Shall I stay? And yeah, okay. Om Shanti. Just try to practice these ideas during this meditation, and just try, you know, separating yourself from the body, from the perceptions during the meditation, so that you become firmly clear that, yes, I am not this body, and everything that's happening, I can let it go like that, easily. Om Shanti.